something of the world's imperfection, and her search for the words that would capture it perfectly. In these moments, the film's pursuit of a higher form of artistic truth merges beautifully with Dickinson's own.
Justin Chang is film critic for the LA Times. On Monday's show, Rick Ankiel was a rookie pitching sensation for the St. Louis Cardinals when something strange happened in his first playoff game.
I threw that pitch, and something in the back of my mind, I just felt like, man, I just threw a wild pitch on national TV.
Suddenly, mysteriously, his control vanished and wouldn't come back. Ankiel talks about his pitching demons, his troubled childhood, and his new memoir, The Phenomenon. Hope you can join us. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our technical director and engineer is Audrey Bentham, with additional engineering support from Joyce Lieberman and Julian Hertzfeld. Our associate producer for online media is Molly C.B. Nesper. Roberta Shurrock directs the show. For Terry Gross, I'm David B. Incouli.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, dedicated to the belief that all lives have equal value and working with partners to help envision a world where every person has the opportunity to live a healthy, productive life at GatesFoundation.org. And from Cancer Treatment Centers of America, offering immunotherapy and other personalized treatment options to address patients' individual needs. More about precision cancer treatment at CancerCenter.com.
Fitness guru Richard Simmons suddenly dropped out of the public eye 3 years ago, and Dan Taberski wanted to know why.
Yes, he can say, look, I can't do this anymore. But the reality is there were hundreds of people that were left behind not knowing what happened.
So he turned his search into a podcast. The man behind Missing Richard Simmons this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Tonight on 360 North at 8, Mongolian parliamentarian Sugbatur Damdin introduces the Juno World Affairs Council audience to Mongolia Today, profile, strengths, and politics, focusing on the development of responsible, accountable, open, and efficient government institutions. American Forum is at 9, and This is America and the World follows at 9:30. It's a great way to look at public affairs tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to a Juno afternoon on this becoming sunny Friday afternoon here in Juno. I'm Andy Klein, your host for today, and today we're going to get the details about this weekend's March for Science. Scott Ferguson will be here to highlight Juno Ventures. We're going to talk about Saturday's Kindness and Couture fundraiser, all about fashion. That's by Rotaract. And we'll get a preview of Dirty Skis playing at the Alaskan this weekend. That's all coming up, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, and a lot more on this Friday edition of a Juno afternoon. But first, National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Art Hughes, in for Antonia Gonzalez. The Cherokee Nation is filing suit against leading pharmaceutical companies in tribal court over what lawyers say is a prescription opioid epidemic. The suit filed Thursday faults six companies, including McKesson, Cardinal Health, and AmerisourceBergen, with flooding the region with addictive pills. Cherokee Attorney General Todd Hembree says the companies named in the suit should have been suspicious about the massive quantities of drugs distributed within the 14 counties that make up the Cherokee Nation.
They knew or should have known that they were flooding the market in the Cherokee Nation. And that's not just the doctor's fault. The distributors and the retailers and the pharmacists have that responsibility to stop that flow also.
The suit also names leading pharmacy chains Walgreens, CVS Health, and Walmart. The suit claims the amount of drugs like hydrocodone and oxycodone issued in 2015 averages as much as 720 pills for every opioid prescription drug user in the Cherokee Nation. Hembree says, in addition to the tragedy of overdose deaths, there is no aspect of Cherokee Nation services that isn't touched by opioid addiction.
Millions upon millions of dollars we spend in addiction treatment and the health concerns that come from addiction. There are broken families because of this. It is a multi-occurrence on a monthly basis where we have to take custody of an Indian child because of opioid addiction.
The state of West Virginia and some cities and counties have filed similar suits. This is the first tribal suit taking on drug companies. Hembree says the suit is an exercise in sovereignty and the legitimacy of tribal law.
One of the benefits at the end of the day is the recognition that tribal courts deserve.
Cherokee Principal Chief Bill John Baker issued a statement saying he fears the opioid epidemic is the next great challenge for a nation that has already endured disease, removal from their homeland, and termination. Advocates for missing Aboriginal women in Canada are expressing disappointment after officials canceled or delayed several consultation meetings. Dan Karpinchuk reports the consultations were part of the lead-up to the national inquiry on the issue.
The delays of the regional advisory meetings came after some families and advocacy groups complained that the inquiry process has failed to reach out to families of the victims. Those meetings were designed to hear advice from families and groups about what issues should be covered when the actual inquiry begins. But the inquiry says the regional advisory meetings need to be reformulated, but with little explanation as to why. Meanwhile, the head of the Native Women's Association of Canada, Francine Joe, says while the delay is disappointing to some, it could be a positive turning point if it means more and better communications with families and survivors.
I do hope that the commissioners come back to this in the next few weeks stronger and more resolute in their promises to these families that, you know, this is going to be for the families, about the families, and in memory of the women that we've lost.
New dates have not yet been set for the advisory meetings in Edmonton and Thunder Bay. The first public hearing is to take place in Whitehorse at the end of May. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
A flurry of political and legal decisions is keeping the fate of the Eastern Band of Cherokee's elected leader up in the air. The Tribal Council was scheduled to proceed with impeaching Principal Chief Patrick Lambert this week, but a tribal court decision delayed that vote by at least 10 days. Also this week, Lambert called a grand council meeting. The Smoky Mountain News in Bryson City, North Carolina, reports that body, with more than 1,300 enrolled members, voted overwhelmingly to dismiss the tribal council's impeachment actions. It's the first grand council assembly in more than two decades. It's not clear what authority that vote holds. It's the latest in an ongoing political battle over more than a year. The Institute of American Indian Arts in Santa Fe is offering a tuition incentive for incoming freshmen who complete a bachelor's degree in 4 years. The IAIA announces it will rebate students' tuition and the cost of books during their senior year. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support by BNSF Railway Company, supporting STEM careers since 1990 as a corporate partner of the American Indian Science and Engineering Society. BNSF STEM scholarships available at aises.org/scholarships.
Support by Bears Ears National Monument, created to honor tribes and protect traditional access. More information, including the latest news about the monument, at protectbearsears.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Support comes from Planned Parenthood, working to provide personalized and compassionate care. From annual exams to birth control options, STD testing to cancer screenings, Planned Parenthood provides reproductive health care with or without insurance. Located next to Twin Lakes at the corner of Egan and Glacier. Appointments online at PlannedParenthood.org.
Healthy Smiles are here. On May 22nd, Search will open the doors to its updated and expanded Children's Dental Clinic. Staffed by board-certified pediatric dentists and outfitted with the latest in pediatric dental technology, the new clinic will provide your child with a lifetime of healthy smiles. All kids' smiles welcome, from the first tooth to 17 years old. Call 789-KIDS to make an appointment for your child today. This message brought to you by Search.
That's what we're here to talk about next, the March for Science. Danielle Redmond and Teresa Soli are in the studio with me. Thanks for coming in. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
And so there's going to be a March for Science. It's happening. Is this tomorrow at 9 a.m.?
Tomorrow.
Okay. Yeah.
Earth Day.
And so just tell me a little bit behind what's happening. You were mentioning there's marches happening all over the world in sort of support of the ideas and principles behind science.
Yeah, exactly. So the last I checked, there are 531 March for Sciences happening across the world.
So if you can't be at the one at Lisbon, this is a good one to be at.
Exactly.
Right? Okay.
Or Washington, D.C., or Anchorage, or San Francisco,
sure.
Or, you know, so many.
So many. 500 plus. Yeah, wow. Amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the movement started out in this country, in the States, at the end of January, but has totally morphed into this international movement for science, which is pretty exciting. So basically bringing science and data, into the realm of political decisions and people standing up and showing the need to make decisions and policy based on good science. So
it seems like it's something that has come to the front in politics right now in a way that's been different than it has before, the sort of idea of discounting scientific data. It's an interesting new development that's been happening, and it seems like it's worldwide.
Right. Transparency and whatnot. So I'm studying science communication for my master's, and so I guess, you know, science communication itself has become kind of a concern to me, you know, whether science is going to be transparent and available to the public and used by policymakers.
Well, let's talk about that just for a second.
Yeah.
The idea of science communication as a field of study.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that is concentrated on in that field of study? And why is that something that is a specific thing that is important to talk about?
Right. Yeah. Good question. So I guess just having, you know, people who specifically kind of translate from the scientific field and the scientists to the general public. And, you know, to fill in that gap that is pretty pertinent, I think, in the scientific field. And so, I mean, I guess it can be any type of science. It can be technological science or health science or climate science. But someone who studies science communication probably just wants to bridge the communication gap.
It reminds me of, like, the work of Rachel Carson, right? She was someone who wasn't specifically a scientist with a Ph.D., but had the ability to understand what was being talked about and then communicate it in an incredibly effective way. Yeah.
Or something. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Danielle, tell me a little bit about the actual event. You've kind of really been helping organize, like, what's going to be happening on the ground. So what's it going to look like tomorrow?
Yeah. Well, Teresa will be on the ground at the march.
Okay.
She will be coordinating that and hosting all these wonderful speakers. And then from the march, we will head down to Juno Douglas High School, where we'll have a Renewable Juno Fair to celebrate local solutions because, as you mentioned before we got on air, there's a lot of scientists. There are a lot of scientists in Juno, and there are a lot of people doing amazing work every day. And
I was saying, yes, we all know a scientist or maybe even possibly have to live with one.
That's right.
And yes. So there's many, yes, it seems like there's so many. Right. I mean,
do you live with a scientist? Yeah.
I don't actually. I live with
moment.
Someone who works in the science field and has done a lot of work in that realm. But
right.
But
that's
she's not a scientist. But she hangs out with scientists.
They're good people.
Yeah, they're good people. They're good people.
They're
factual based.
A lot of good people there. So the march is going to stand up in support of science education and evidence based policy in a very nonpartisan way. And the fair is going to really celebrate the ways that science is being implemented in Juneau. And so we're going to have people from school groups. We're going to have, you know, the Juneau Montessori School there making sculptures from recycled materials. And
cool.
We're going to have people celebrating Indigenous wisdom with the Wuxi'in dance group, and we'll be doing drumming with them. And these are all family-friendly activities that's really celebrating kids of all ages.
Right, so great stuff for kids to do. And and I think that that's sort of where that love of science, of factual-based learning, of learning based on things like data kind of starts when you're a kid, and it starts unraveling the mysteries of what the world is about. Science sets up this systematic way of understanding things that seem ununderstandable.
Right.
Right?
Yep, a nice framework.
Yeah,
and we'll
yeah.
be taking it into all these different realms of application. So we'll be looking at everything from composting and gardening and growing your own food to electric cars and electric boats and electric district heating. We'll be looking at climate change. We'll be looking at family health, education, all those different applications.
Really cool, right.
I'm and so excited.
Yeah, and basing it all around Earth Day seems like a great day to do it.
Right.
Right.
This is something we all have in common.
Yeah, the
that
Earth.
True.
Itself.
We cannot separate ourselves.
Yes, you know, we're all made of the Earth.
Yes. We can't really get away from it.
Yeah, you know. Absolutely. So, and it's something that's happening, as you say, internationally. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess without getting too overly political about things, what's going on, do you think, that's bringing it up to this head where we really have to actually have marches to just, you know,
a march in the name of science.
And the march in the name of science, in the name of this idea of how we've understood the world for centuries.
Right.
I will just say that up to this point, the scientists that I know here in Juneau have wanted absolutely nothing to do with any of the political activities that I've been involved in.
Right.
But I think we are at an important moment.
Right. It seems like many scientists maybe feel like it is time to make science political and to show policymakers that, you know, science and politics can't be separate. And I do think it's really interesting that people from, you know, several different countries and continents across the world seem to be having the same feelings. You know, we can't just say it's federal and it's Washington, D.C. and it's the United States of America, because clearly other people in different places are stepping up for it, which is pretty powerful and amazing.
It's an interesting place that we're at, because when I think about the things that growing up, I'm like 50 years old, right? So I was from the 60s and 70s. And when you thought about, wow, America's the greatest, right? What makes America the greatest? So much of what the idea behind that was the advances we made as a country in the field of science.
Right.
You know, we were the first on the moon, and that was an amazing thing, and that had to do with science. We had technological breakthroughs. We were at the forefront of those things. Those seemed like an area of pride for us. The scientific advancements we made as a country were part of our pride, and somehow that's
maybe
gotten a little muddy.
A
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I think more and more our policies are just divorced from physical reality, and we do that to our own detriment and peril.
Mm-hmm.
I think that maybe sometimes the things that we're dealing with now are these things that are really difficult. They're slow moving. They're hard to observe. When you talk about climate change, you talk about those things. You have to really decide you're going to listen and understand the science behind it. It's not so apparent. It's not a rocket. Oh, they made a rocket. It went to the moon. That's undeniable. It happened. It's a thing that happened. Climate change can be something different, and other scientific warnings can be different. And
the same is true with public health and oceans. You know, those changes are incremental. There's little duck bites over time that really add up, and they're not an obvious, you know, direct cause all the time.
Yeah. Okay, well, it's a march on science. Let's go through one more time. If people want to get involved in tomorrow and want to show up and engage in all the fun and cool activities, what do they got to do? 9 o'clock.
Yes. So at 9 o'clock, we're beginning our rally at the Capitol building, and we are hoping that people will come as close to 9 o'clock as possible, because we really just have the space in front of the Capitol reserved and cleared for us for about an hour. And so we're going to listen to several wonderful speakers at the Capitol itself, and we'll spend about an hour there. We'll fill out some postcards. We'll energize, and then at about 10 o'clock, we're going to make our way towards JDHS, towards the high school. So we'll make our way towards the Renewable Juneau Fair altogether, We'll take a pit stop at the federal building, so we'll be walking around Willoughby, and then we'll just celebrate.
All right, we'll celebrate. All right. All right, it's all happening starting tomorrow at 9 a.m. Meet at the Capitol. Get there before 10 because you guys are going to – this march is going to begin at 10, right? So if you get there at 10:15 and you wonder where everyone was, they started the march. Like, it started, right?
Yeah.
Although maybe the tail end of the march will be that big. Maybe it'll take that long to get off the hill.
And if you do miss the march, the fair will be open from 10 to 2. You can swing by any time. You don't have to have been at the march or anything like that.
So okay,
so free and great. Open to the public and family friendly.
All right, the March for Science. Danielle and Teresa, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it. Appreciate
Thanks for having
it.
Us.
All right.
The Alaska State Improv Festival returns to McPheeters Hall in the Hangar Ballroom, April 27 to May 1, with groups from across the continent featuring Listen Sams from San Francisco. Shows begin at 6:30 each night. The Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, McPheeters Hall and the Hangar Ballroom. Visit asifest.com for more details. Alaska State Improv Festival, April 27 to May 1, asifest.com.
Lights, camera, fashion. This is Alex, president of the Juno Rotaract Club, inviting you to join us and reach as we host Juno's hottest runway show. That's the Kindness and Couture Fashion Show on Saturday, April 22nd at 7:30. Get dressed up and come down to the Elizabeth Proud of Tall to check out the latest and greatest looks from businesses like Shoefly, Alaskan Brewing Co. Depot, Bustin' Out Boutique, Alaskan Dames, and more. General admission and VIP tickets are now available online at thejack.org, Parkside, and Alaskan Dames. Don't miss out on an opportunity to dress up and join Juno's finest to raise money for two great nonprofits.
And welcome back to the studios here for a Juno Afternoon, joined by Scott Ferguson and Caitlin Ferguson, who are part of a brand new thing happening with scouting in Juno called the Venture Crew. Scott, what is going on here?
So what we're trying to do is start a new program in Juno. This is a first for Juno that we're aware of, although it's been around for 20 years now. And this is scouting for older kids, for both males and females. They have to complete 8th grade or be 14 years of old age and be under 20.
So it's sort of like a little bit, probably a little bit more advanced kind of scouting techniques, things like that are going to be what's aimed at? Is that right?
It is more advanced than the typical Boy Scout program. The requirements are much more in-depth. It's kind of the difference between high school and college. This is more college-level scouting.
Right.
And for first, you know, we're including girls.
Oh, that's really cool. So, Caitlin, that's probably pretty exciting, right?
So
are you going to be one of the first class of the venture crew that's going to be, is that the goal here? Yeah?
Yeah.
That's cool. So it seems to me like, especially at this more advanced level, scouting, Juneau, Alaska is a good place to be a scout, right? I mean, there is so much cool stuff to do that's in that realm of what scouting is all about, right?
It is. The only problem with being Juneau is Ventures isn't just local, and what we can do with the venture crew is limited only to the imagination of the crew. It's quite possible that we decide that everybody's going to take scuba lessons and go down to Australia and dive the Great Barrier Reef.
Doesn't sound bad. Let's do that.
And that's the whole...
Maybe I could do this. I'm a little over the 21 range.
Well, we need adult leaders,
okay.
Too.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I have an in
all
for
right.
you.
All right. Okay.
And
but the travel costs, I mean, all, like any athletic team or things like that, obviously, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. That is
a
barrier.
That's the downfall of being in Juneau. Mm-hmm. You can't drive anywhere. You want to go anywhere like that. Obviously, Australia is going to be really expensive, but there's going to be cost involved.
It's true, because sometimes when I think about scouting, right, I think about your classic image, right? Out in the woods, building the campfire, tents, you know, all that really cool stuff, which is a big part of it, right? I mean, that's a fun part of it. Are you a scout right now?
No.
Okay. So what are you looking forward to most in this new program? Out scouting the Boy Scouts. I like it. When you say out scouting, though, what do you think of when you think of that scouting?
Like climbing volcanoes or rafting the Yukon.
That's pretty aggressive. I like that. That's pretty. I like that. That's good. Yeah, rafting the Yukon. That's something to go do. And so, yeah, outdoors, right? Getting out there, doing that stuff. Although scouting also has lots of other ways of showing achievement and showing that you've kind of made advances and educated yourself in lots of different areas, right?
It is, and there is an advancement program, but it's not the main focus of a venture crew. The main focus of Venture Crew is to use the adventures that we're going to go on as a training tool to teach leadership and planning skills. It's really about the kids learning how to plan. The kids will set a goal. The kids will come up with a plan to carry out that goal. Then we execute that goal and talk about what happened, whether it's as simple as we're going to hike up to one of the Forest Service cabins for the weekend or as complicated as going and diving the Great Barrier Reef. The whole point of Ventures is that process, and kind of unique in scouting is we're really going to turn the keys, if you will, over to the kids to come up with the program, and the adults are kind of there to act as brakes to go, well, we need to slow down a little bit to keep us on the rails and keep everything safe and ask questions. Well, have you thought about this?
So it's really this like early training on what project management is all about.
It is project management, working as a committee with a group and dealing with conflict resolution. And that's always been a goal of scouting. Scouting has always used the outdoors, kind of this big laboratory, to teach these skills that are life skills. Because you're going to have to work in a committee. You're going to have to deal with conflict resolution. And you might as well learn it at 14 when you're trying to get your fellow crew member convinced that it's time to do the dishes.
Right,
your turn.
Right. That's a
I
tough
did it
discussion.
Last time.
That's a tough one, right? Yeah, right. Well, that's super fun. So, do you have in mind a few things that are maybe the first goals or first kinds of projects to suggest as you start developing the venture crew?
As we develop the venture crew, one of the first things we do is we actually hand out a worksheet where the kids tell us what they're interested in. And then we build the program around that. We anticipate being kind of an outdoors-oriented group just because of where we are, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's how the focus is going to turn out once we get bodies into the program and see what the kids want us to do.
Because it sounds like they really have a lot of ability to drive the agenda, to drive what's going to be happening. Is that something that you're looking forward to?
Yeah.
I mean, like, so when you mentioned rafting in the Yukon, I mean, is that something you're going to bring up? Like, I think we should do this. And
yeah.
But then what happens? How do you convince the group that that's the thing that should happen?
Well, I'm, like, foreshadowing that a bunch of the group are going to be my friends, and they're going to be like, hey, Caitlin, read, lead, lead, go, first.
But what if they don't? Like, what if what happens is they don't say lead, 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 and what happens is it's a bunch of people who have really strong ideas about things to do, and let's say it's the UConn thing. How will you approach that? How will that be the thing that you approach and try to get accomplished?
No.
You don't know?
No.
Maybe it's something you're going to learn as part of the venture crew.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you would say, look, here's this proposal I've mm-hmm. got together. Here's the cost. Here's the time commitment. Here's yeah. the way it would work. Here's the benefits.
Yeah.
Like, here's how cool it is.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to put together a PowerPoint, show a slideshow.
Yeah.
All that
mm-hmm.
stuff. Right?
Mm-hmm.
I know. I mean, I do need to be in this. I'm really excited about this. It sounds good. All right, it's the Venture Crew, and there's going to be a meeting happening, right?
And there's a meeting. It's this Sunday starting at 6 p.m. at Chapel by the Lake. We're going to start by going through explaining more in depth what the program is and how the program works, and we're hoping to recruit enough people so that we can form the crew and carry on and start operations for this summer.
Sounds good, and it looks like if anyone needs more information, they can contact you, Scott Ferguson, at junoventures@gmail.com.
That is correct.
All right. Sounds great. The Venture Crew. It's going to be a whole new crew of people, Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, scouts of all ages from 8th grade up to 21 years, right?
They have to have completed 8th grade or be 14 years of age.
So it's sort of that kind of that time when you're really wanting to figure out what's out there in the world and do a lot of really cool stuff. Caitlin, you've already got stuff in mind, I can tell. That you don't have just the UConn. You got like 3 or 4 things, right?
Yeah.
You're already talking to your friends. It's already in the works. All right. I can see it happening. It's the Venture Crew. It's going to be a fun time. Thanks so much to both you, Scott and Caitlin, for coming in and letting us know about it. The meeting is on Sunday, April 23rd from 6 to 8. It's at Chapel by the Lake. And for more info, you can write Scott at junoventures@gmail.com. Thanks to both of you for coming in. Appreciate
it.
Coming up next, here's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 21st of April, 2017. It's the birthday of the naturalist John Muir, born in Dunbar, Scotland, 1838. Grew up on a farm in Wisconsin. His father, strict Christian, the boy by the age of 11 could recite most of the Old Testament and all of the New. He was very smart with mechanics and inventions. He invented complex door locks, an automatic horse feeding machine, a fire lighter, an elaborate clock that told the day of the week and was connected to a bed that would put the boy up on his feet at the appointed hour. Went to the University of Wisconsin, Madison, where he got interested in plants, in the woods and the meadows. But still he worked on his inventions. He made a desk that was connected to a clock that would kick into gear as soon as young John woke up, and it took each book that he needed to study and pushed it to the top of the desk and opened it to the correct page. A whole number of complex scientific instruments. But his life changed when he had an accident in a wagon wheel factory. He was working there as a sawyer. A file slipped, hit him in the eye. He was temporarily blinded, spent 6 weeks in a dark room, not knowing if he'd ever see again. When he did get his sight back, he realized how important the beautiful world was to him, and he said, I bade adieu to all my mechanical inventions, determined to devote the rest of my life to the study of the inventions of God. He set out on a walk, 1,000 miles from Indiana to the Gulf of Mexico, then walked from San Francisco up into the Sierra Nevada, and that became the great cause of his life, protecting wilderness areas, particularly the Yosemite Valley. And to accomplish that, he founded the Sierra Club. And it's the birthday of Charlotte Bronte, born in Yorkshire, England, 1816, the third of 6 children, famous for her novel Jane Eyre, published in 1847, story of a plain and penniless orphan governess who falls in love with her troubled employer, who is also married. Within a year of the publication of Jane Eyre, Charlotte's three remaining siblings died, Anne and Emily of tuberculosis, and her brother Branwell of alcoholism. Charlotte eventually married, became pregnant, died of complications of pregnancy in 1855. Here's a poem by Natalie Safer, Road Trip West. A bright thought flies across my afternoon, fighting to stay aloft, as my finger on an old road map traces a trip across the desert. Decades ago, driving west in the early summer of our marriage. We traveled by night in a compact car, a small dog panting in the back seat. We fled scalding walls of heat toward an ocean we could only picture, even trailer trucks behind us huffing across the Rockies could not make us give way, nor fog banks or detours we met full face. Challenged, we pressed north to the redwoods. These things I knew. We were young and capable. This was our America, our luck to belong here. We were pursuing an instinct to find our edge. Look back at our innocence from a distance. We saw rooms confining our aspirations, doors to push open to a maze of choices. Road Trip West by Natalie Safer from Eyewitness, published by Dos Madres and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Get your tickets now for the 2017 Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. This year promises to electrify with performances from the Congress, Grammy winner Zool Bailey with the Vega Quartet, Axiom Brass Quintet, and a festival finale not to be missed with Richard Thompson. Tickets are available at the Jack, Hearthside Books, JAHC.org, and JazzandClassics.org. This message brought to you by Juno Jazz and Classics.
I'm ready.
Alex, ready?
I'm so ready.
All right. Alex, there's something a little funny going on with my mic right now, but hold on one second. I think I can get that. Hold on.
The struggle is real.
Alex, tell us about what's going on. Trendis and Couture.
So, yes, this Saturday at 7:30 at the Elizabeth Pradovich Hall, we are going to have a full runway show featuring local businesses and all the fashion that they have to offer. And this is actually, it's a fundraiser. I'm the Rotaract president, and we are pairing up with Reach. We've got Joanne here representing them. We're coming together to put on a fantastic show for all of Juno. So, this Saturday at 6:30, the doors will be open for you to come on in. There will be a silent auction, a live dessert auction, a beautiful show of beautiful men and women rocking the cool duds from all around town. And there are three different ticket prices. You can either get a general admission, which will get you in the door, and we've got general seating as well as standing room. We also have VIP tickets, which will get you a seat close to the runway.
That's the way to go.
Exactly. The way to go is the VIP table, which gets gets you 4 seats, and that gets you a free bottle of champagne, or sorry, sparkling wine. Sparkling wine, that which was donated by Specialty Imports, by the way, thanks to them. And then also bottle table service, so you don't have to stand in line for the bar.
That's nice. That's the way to go.
It is.
You know, when you're going to go high class, first class, you got to get the table.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on, bring the friends, get the party.
Yep, and McGivney's is providing us with, you know, with quite a few bartenders and cocktailers, so the line for the bar should not be that long, thankfully.
Okay. Well, my mic was not working well, but I want to introduce Alex Brown is here and Joanne Flora. Thanks to you both for coming in. So tell me, Joanne, a little bit about how this thing started developing and what's the kind of concept behind the Kindness in Couture?
Well, you know, it's entirely a Rotaract function. And we got invited to participate and share in the wealth,
cool,
so to speak.
Yeah.
And we're very grateful for that. We're coming up on our 40th year of serving Southeast Alaska residents with developmental disabilities. And like a lot of nonprofits, you know, you're always thinking about the next way to build membership, to build resources, and Rotaract invited us to participate. So we have models in the show. Some of our actual reach participants are going to be spreading their stuff.
Really cool.
On behalf of local couture vendors. And we've got some people behind the scenes, and we're really grateful to be able to participate. As a person who was a Rotarian for a number of years, Rotaract is a great organization for the younger set, the under 30s, and they have such a great sense of community service. So it's really quite an honor to be associated with them, and what they're doing for Reach is really quite outstanding.
So how's the show going to go? How's that going to work? Yeah,
I'm like so ready to talk about it.
I have my table.
Yeah. So basically, we have we've got two MCs, Abby O'Brien and Aquarius Valentine, the drag queen extraordinaire. They are going to walk us through as each store, you know, goes on stage. DJ Manu will be there on tune, so you know the music's going to be
good.
Killer.
Yeah.
And he's one of us.
Yeah.
He is one of our Reach staff.
Oh, that's awesome.
So,
okay.
Yeah, so we're
going to
have another one of our people right out in front. Exactly.
All right.
And then there will be a silent auction as well, and that won't close until after intermission. We will have a decent-sized intermission for people, you know, to get around, talk about all the amazing things they've seen on stage. And then we have a live dessert auction that Abby O'Brien will be putting on. That is going to be very entertaining. I was told that the desserts are going to be sexy. That's all I know. I have no idea anything else about the desserts, but I was told that they're going to be sexy. I don't know. Whatever that means.
And then
chocolate.
Yeah, right.
Lots of chocolate.
And whipped cream.
Yes. So hopefully, yeah, then that will happen. And then there'll be two parts of the show, and the stores are kind of intermixed. So the lineup for the show, it's going to be entertaining. The shows that are participating are, they all know what they're doing. You know, all the models are, we will have model coaches. So even though there's models who might not have, you know, been on a runway before, it's still going to be really fun and entertaining.
And that's a really fun thing, isn't it? That, like, you know, just people can get out there and do that for the first time.
Yeah,
their
stuff.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
So the lineup for the show, we have, Alaska Dames, Downtown Dames, and Lillette. We have Alaskan Brewing Co. Depot, which, thank you to them. They donated beer for us for the event. Then we have Annie Kales, Bustin' Out Boutique, Cassandra's Closet, Freya, Lou LaRoe. Martha's Flowers is featured in quite a lot. I know she's making crowns and capes and, like, jewelry out of flowers. I didn't know that you could do that.
Right.
Pretty Please, Juno, Resolute Boutique and Lifestyle, The Rose, Shoefly, and Trickster Co. So quite a roundup. I know that Crystal Worrell from Trickster Co. just did a fashion show up in Anchorage, so she's like ready.
Ready to go.
She's ready.
She's primed. Yeah. She's all set. No problem. Ready to go. So what? Anything like really unusual? Anything that you're kind of looking forward to as like a thing? Like, oh, I can't wait to see this one thing or a couple of things or.
You know,
I think the thing that I'm the most excited about to see will be the Reach participants up on stage.
Yeah,
I will probably cry. Yeah, I've been saying that all week.
Yeah,
I'm probably going to cry. My a lot of people don't know, my uncle, Mark Davis, is a Reach recipient, and he is going to get up on stage and represent Alaskan Dames. So I'm really, really looking forward to seeing that. Fun. He is quite a character. I was working on his runway walk with him earlier today as we were getting his outfit figured out. So.
And how is all that worked? Have you worked with all the different vendors to like kind of coordinate music and do that kind of stuff, or do they all have their own thing
so
that they do? Or
each vendor was in charge of doing their own thing. We gave them a time limit, and then they were allowed to have as many or as few models as they wanted to. For music, I'm a little bit of a control freak, so I was like, you can make a suggestion, but ultimately it's up to Manu and me. So just because I want it to be a fluid, beautiful show.
Yeah,
I don't want repeats.
And
and we don't want to hear top 40 songs. We want to hear the cool stuff, the underground stuff. Like, I'm sure you totally understand. It's going to be a production. I think it's a show that's worth coming out and watching, and I think people will be entertained from beginning to end.
How long have you guys been working on this? Months and months, or
yeah. So I want to say we started kind of planning it out maybe 8 months ago, and we reached out to store owners. I started reaching out. I started talking to them about it. Like, you know, I put the word out quite far in advance, but I didn't really settle down on the date. Like, not on the date, but on the. I didn't really let them know which day exactly we were doing it until maybe. In January.
But spending months and months of work. I mean, it's a lot.
Both the stores had at least 2 months to kind of get their acts together.
Yeah.
So I'm sure, I mean, to be honest with you, when I've done fashion shows before, I try to get all of my stuff done at least a couple weeks in advance. But sometimes you don't end up with a look until the day of,
right.
Or a model cancels, and then you're like, what do I do?
And everything changes.
That's
you know, something that I think that's important for the public to understand is that we're used to the wearable art style of runway show, and this is not that. This is a legitimate fashion runway show. So it doesn't take anything away from the wearable art end of it, but I think this is the first time ever, or if not a very long time, that we've actually had a real runway fashion show with local vendors here in Juneau. So
No umbrellas.
I did retail therapy the year before.
But it's true featuring the clothes, featuring the look, featuring the line.
And the local businesses.
Kind of
I think it's important, especially to highlight the stores out there that are doing good work in this town and are willing to donate their time and their hours and their clothes.
And their clothes.
To help us raise money for these two really deserving, groups. So I think the difference, I think, so before I threw a fashion show under Alaskan Dames, you guys, Bruco threw, that show. Now it's in the hands of a group that's supposed to be throwing events like
nonprofit group that
needs to do community events. And so I think that now that this is in the hands of that group, that it will continue to go on and continue to be an annual thing and continue to be something that everybody comes out for every year.
Thing to look forward to. Yeah.
And of course, people are encouraged to dress up
because
I mean, think like New York Fashion Week,
absolutely.
You know. Put on your best duds.
Gotta be seen, right?
You gotta be seen, right?
Can people get tickets?
So tickets can be purchased either through the JAC. I'm not quite sure. I know we were having some issues with purchasing online, but you're always welcome to call. Also, Alaskan Dames and the Downtown McGivneys and Downtown Dames have tickets for sale. Reach up on 3rd Street has tickets for sale. So those are they're $25 for general admission, $35 for VIP, and then $275 for the table for four people.
All right. So sounds great. It's going to be the Kindness and Couture show. It's happening tomorrow night.
Dress up, people.
We're
ready. We're ready. We're like, we got our hair done. We're getting our hair done.
Nailed
we're,
it.
You know, actually, though. And then, we've got our outfits picked out. We're ready.
All right. Going to be coming up. The show starts at 7:30. Doors open at 6:30. And there's still tickets available at jahc.org and over at Alaska Dames and at Reach. And at Hearthside as well? Be there, man, right? It's going to be place to be.
That's it.
Exactly. All right, coming up next, here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Most of the time, a ruby-crowned kinglet is a fraud with feathers, neither ruby nor regal. Just a tiny songbird washed in faded olive green, with a wing bar and messy eye ring. Sure, the male shows a hint of crimson atop his head, but hardly a ruby crown to justify his name. But if you forsake the kinglet for flashier birds, you'll miss one of nature's great events. It begins with a song. That mile of music comes from a bird 4 inches long and weighing about a quarter of an ounce. But the show's only beginning. When courting a female, and often when dueling with another male, the kinglet unleashes the true fire in his crown. He begins to expose those ruby feathers, and his crown glows like an ember. Then, in an instant, the crown ignites. At long last, the feathery fireworks that give the ruby-crowned kinglet his name. And then, in another instant, the show is over, and the crown recedes, at least until his next performance. Now's the time to look out for these fireworks, as kinglets migrate north across much of the continent toward breeding sites in remote evergreen woods. See the display at birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
All right. We're on mic now, guys. It's Dirty Steve.
Hey, what's up? Sorry about that.
We were playing stuff off. Which is pretty funny. We were playing stuff off your iPhone, and people started calling in. Like, oh, hey, we hear you on the radio.
Nobody ever called in.
We're blowing up right now.
The same person called twice. They really want to talk to him.
Oh, well, this is the things that happen on live radio, no problem. Dirty Skis, thanks so much, you guys, for coming in. Appreciate it.
Thanks, yeah, thank you.
Thanks
what's
so
going
much.
On? You're playing at the Alaskan this weekend?
Yeah.
Where do you guys hail from?
All the way from Sitka.
Sitka, yeah. Alaska. Mm-hmm. All right.
Many miles.
Born and raised or all over the place? Or?
Two of us are. I am.
Yeah. And tell me just a little bit. That was some of the kind of, we heard a little bit of a unmastered version of a
Yeah,
that
we're about to release some songs. That's one of our closer tracks that we have to being finished. And maybe we can lead out with a little bit of the end of it because
sure.
We could hear much. But
yeah
it's we're trying to produce some stuff.
So
get it out there.
So I mean, this is always the boring question, but if you can describe the genre or the type or how
tough
you
one.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's a tough one. How would you sort of what inspires you to?
We have two working phrases right now, and I think the two of them together really describe it. One is carnival rock, and the other one is wet sock rock.
Wet sock rock, I like better.
And we're all original music, and you know we have a lot of different elements, but it's rock, it's a little funky, it's, you know we just have elements to it, and it's hard to really describe, but it's definitely rock.
It's definitely got some. You're jamming some there. It sounds like you're kind of mixing a lot of different things coming
a
together.
A little psychedelic, definitely. Yeah.
That's really cool. So why that? Why is it that fascinates you? Is that just?
I think that's just kind of what naturally happens.
There's really no forethought
input into it. It's just kind of what we get in the room and play is kind of what our product ends up being. So.
And then what's the instrumentation? Let's go down the line here.
I'm Cody. I play the bass.
Okay.
I'm Sam. I'm guitar.
My name's Van. I do vocals and keys.
I'm Joey. I play drums.
I knew you were the drummer, man. You were just back there being quiet, being the drummer.
Stay in the back.
He's looking for some tom legs.
Well, that's cool. So a really traditional lineup, right? I mean, that's just a traditional four-piece rock band lineup, right? And
yep.
And then Are there things that you guys think that you do with how you work together that brings something really different to the fore? I mean, is there a way that you either work your, you know, the rhythm sections working together or the guitars working together or that
definitely
kind of thing?
Definitely. Well, Joey and I played in a band prior to this, and then Sam and Van played in a band prior to this, so we all kind of have our own chemistry. Me being the bassist and Joey being the drummer, we really lock in together.
Good chemistry, good communication.
Yep.
I think the thing with this band is we really everyone really contributes their own bit. You know, it's not really controlled. We're not telling each other what to do, but we're all helping each other bring the best out of whatever we want to play, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's just this eclectic rock mix.
Do you guys focus on your instrumentation? Do you focus on vocals? Is there a combination there? Are you doing a lot of harmonizing, stuff like
yep,
that?
Yeah, we're starting to do harmonies.
Yeah,
it's pretty
right.
fun.
Getting into the three-part harmonies.
We got three-part harmonies
making
going on.
It a little more intricate.
It seems like that really elevates stuff, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
You get into
it's
those
fun.
Harmonies.
Yeah.
It's like all of a sudden, whoa, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
Yep.
It's kind of a separator often from bands that can really nail that, and then ones that just, you know, are more like kind of hanging out, having a good time.
Yeah, it adds impact. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, how long have you guys been playing together?
We're
2 years.
Like a couple years now.
Yeah,
right.
two, I think. And I joined a year ago. I joined on the bass. And
cool. And how much time do you think you put into it, like on a weekly basis? Like,
oh boy, 3 days a week normally is what we try to hit.
Yeah.
And then
at least.
I mean, this winter we didn't really play too many shows this winter, but we were in the room a lot. And then we kind of emerged in the spring and came out and really, really honed our sound.
Has your focus been on honing your sound to gig or to get recorded stuff or to do a CD or?
I think gigging.
Yeah, or live. Yeah. Yeah,
we're a live band.
We're all
we really
about
like
the sweet gigs, and that's why we're at the Alaskan here in Dana.
Yeah,
it's a good ride, man. It's fun.
We've all been there before, and it's really fun.
You played there before?
We've played there before. Yeah.
Yeah, last September, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Very cool, yeah. It's a fun, yeah, it's definitely super fun.
Yeah, it's very skeezy.
It's a perfect name.
We get along pretty well.
Yeah, yeah, right. You understand the ethic there. Absolutely, yeah. And so are you guys kind of looking toward, like you've got something here that you've recorded and maybe you're trying to master, are you trying to get to where you've got something?
Yeah, recording is a new phase for us, and we want to release, you know, an EP and then eventually an album. And it's something that right now we're taking really seriously and developing. It's still kind of a new thing to us.
Are you self-recording, just kind of like at your studios, at your kind of practice space and
yeah,
recording it?
Yeah, we have a buddy of ours that does our engineering. He comes in, sets everything up, mics it, and then we send it to – we're trying to find people in town to mix and master as well.
So that's cool. That's like a level up if you've got someone who's really engineering it for
you.
Yeah,
it's nice
to
have fresh ears
on
the project.
Right.
It's a learning curve too. It's, you know, it's a lot of – it's a big process to actually – have multiple people working on one sound and trying to get the sound you want, and it gets tricky. So
it's something
fun.
Totally different. I mean, the recorded sound versus what's great live and what's going to work live, it can be completely different things.
Yeah, we don't want the recorded tracks to be too different from our live as well, because we don't want so it's a balance.
Yeah. So what's the next – so you guys are kind of – you got a next step in mind? You got a next goal in mind for what we're trying to do next with the band?
Well, next goal is
I mean, you're gigging
–
doing the album.
Yeah, getting,
okay.
Getting that done and then gigging more in around Alaska.
Yeah.
We're creating an Alaskan presence. We really want to be an Alaskan band.
It seems like there's a cool scene in Sitka.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And with Lone Skillet and all that kind of forming that, you know, Petri dish – base of people wanting to do stuff together, right?
It's a fluctuating scene, too, because people kind of come and go. Bands exist and they disappear.
Transient.
Yeah.
You can definitely have some fun gigs in Sitka, though.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like for the amount of people there, there's like a lot of – there seems like there's a lot of venues.
A lot
right?
of musicians,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
There's a huge presence on those venues as well.
A huge presence?
Yeah. There's – I mean – every one of those venues has the ability to be packed on any given night.
Right. I mean, every single venue could be the cool venue that night, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it can be the place to be. Yeah, right. And has capacity and has the ability to take a live band and that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. It can also be dead, too.
Sure. That happens. That'll happen.
Yep.
You know, every now and then that happens, yeah. It all depends on what else is happening in town, right?
Yeah, probably, yeah. Uh-huh. It's, everybody's kind of on the same. They like their mood cycle is the same. It feels like, you know, everybody comes out on a Friday night or they come out on a Saturday night and they don't do the other. So it's
right.
Like, depending on what night you're playing, so you can it's either hit or miss. So.
Yeah, yeah.
Small
yeah.
Cast.
Wintertime can be cold.
Wintertime can be cold.
And
that's Alaska, man. That's why we're here, right? We don't want a warm winter.
It's getting nice now.
Precisely.
Yeah. All right, well, let's hear a little more of this track. This is Dirty Skis, and don't call Dirty Skis.
My brother is trying to call me.
Don't call, man. He's playing something on the radio right now. So we're going to hear this. Is the track, does the track have a name?
Waves.
This is Waves from Dirty Skis. We're going to hear this. You guys are playing tonight and tomorrow night at the Alaskan?
10 yep. p.m.
10 p.m., playing both nights. Dirty Skis, thanks so much for coming.
Yeah,
from
thanks
Sitka.
Thanks for having us.
We're going to play them out here.
Thanks, guys.
All right. That's a little taste of Dirty Skis. They're going to be playing Dirty Skis, right, guys?
Yeah.
They're going to be playing all this weekend at the Alaskan. Go check them out. Thanks, you guys, for coming in. Appreciate it. And thanks for listening to Juno Afternoon today. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks for listening, everyone.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
So far, we've passed 24 laws. We signed 24 executive orders. We've achieved the first Supreme Court confirmation in 100 days since 1881.
Are Trump's executive actions policy achievements or just appearances?
For Friday, April 21st, this is All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Kelly McEvers, coming up the week in politics and these stories.
We'll hear from a campaigner for releasing Egyptian political prisoners about the American aid worker who was just freed.
That came after the Egyptian president's White House visit.
I'm hesitant to chalk this up to President Trump's personal diplomacy.
And as the Trump administration approaches 100 days in power, we hear about the history of measuring presidents by that time frame.
Presidents since Roosevelt have been held up to a standard that not even Roosevelt achieved.
Those stories are coming up after these news headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. President Trump says he expects to unveil a proposed tax reform plan that will, in his words, provide a massive tax cut for individuals and businesses. Speaking at the Treasury Department, Trump indicating today he intends to provide details of the plan sometime next week, just before he completes his first 100 days in office.
People can't do
and is a first step toward a tax reform that reduces rates, provides relief to our middle class, and lowers our business tax, which is one of the highest in the world.
The administration had originally set a goal of getting a tax reform measure passed by August, but now Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin admits the deadline has slipped. Still, he says the administration hopes to get a tax reform measure enacted before year's end. An audit from North Carolina's Board of Education says 500 people who cast ballots in the 2016 elections were not eligible to vote. Will Michaels of member station WUNC says the vast majority of those votes came from convicted felons.
North Carolina allows felons to vote after they've served time, but the report says more than 400 votes came from felons who were serving active sentences. Board of Elections Chair Kim Stratch called the cases unacceptable, but pointed out they were just 0.01% of the votes counted last year, and they did not change the outcome of any race. The report says there was no evidence of coordinated voter fraud, but Republican leaders in the legislature immediately used it to argue that North Carolina's invalidated voter ID law should be reinstated. The Supreme Court could decide by early next week whether to hear that case. For NPR News, I'm Will Michaels in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
United Airlines has announced CEO Oscar Munoz will no longer automatically become chairman of the company's board in 2018. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports the company also says it will try to restructure its compensation around customer service measures.
The airline made the disclosure in a regulatory filing. Munoz, whose compensation last year totaled $18.7 million, will forfeit his chairmanship. Consumer